Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. All right, people. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of the Podcast for Good. I am Philip Kerrigan, the Program Manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and my co-host, as always, is nobody today. Ms. Lucas, Ms. Heather Lucas, my stalwart, the one who typically joins us, is actually doing her real job today, ensuring that the charities you give your money to are actually going to receive that money through reconciliation disbursement. So she is working on that right now. And it gave me an opportunity to interview John Stuart Murphy, the artistic director, and the managing director, Charlie McCurry, of the Kabiri. So we actually dove into a little bit longer of an interview than we usually do because, you know, frankly, I don't have to work that hard today. Do the intro and do the questions and do the facts and figures because, you know, I'm not the one collecting those. It was an incredible conversation with John and Charlie that talked about, that weaved through various various topics like how difficult it is for dance theaters and just theaters and artistic venues in general to stay alive in Seattle right now, given the economic conditions. Talked about the importance of their work, the type of work they do, and really just overall how they got into it. Great stories from both of them. We really hope you appreciate the podcast. I'm not going to take up much more of your time rambling on. I'm going to be moderately rambly today. Thank you, Charlie, for that sweet new description of the way I speak. I appreciate that. So without further ado, I'm going to toss it to Charlie McCrary, the managing director, and John Stuart Murphy, the artistic director of the Kabiri. Here it is. All right, so I am here with Charlie McCrary, the managing director, and John Stuart Murphy, the artistic director of the Kabiri, located in Seattle?
Correct.
All right. Yes, well, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Thank you.
So first, can you guys give us a little history of the Kabiri and what you do for the community?
Well, we're entering our...
You're doing great.
We're entering
our... You sound fantastic.
Thank you. We're entering our 20-year anniversary, mm-hmm. May 1st.
Yeah.
That was our first official show.
Wow.
It's actually about 22 years mm-hmm. for the concept. I started on a New Year's Eve on a street corner in Seattle, street performing. And the Pioneer Square crowd was terrified of us. terrified of me.
That's what happens when you fling fire around.
Yeah. Is that what
we were doing all sorts of stuff. Puppets, fire. Gosh. It was just making a statement.
Yeah.
A homeless fellow came up to me and he was like, "That's the best thing I ever seen around here." And he threw 75 cents into my hat.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a biochemist at the time, and uh-huh. I was trying to not be a biochemist, or I was having a hard time, so I went to doing some street theater on the side. And having the denizens of the nightclubs look oddly at me, and then having this homeless person very... He was not an uneducated fellow. He was somebody who would really hit hard times. And he spoke very eloquently. And it was like, God, I should keep doing this.
Yeah.
So I did it the next week, different area, mm-hmm. got like $10. And then I invested that into some props.
And, okay.
A year later, a year and a half later, I had met Charlie and my friend JP and a few others. And we coordinate, I'd been coordinating this idea of like really making these very educational but lively performances. And it caught then. And I think I can pass that to Charlie.
Did you guys have, when you first started, it sounds like it was really anywhere and everywhere that you could perform. Did you end up being able to, when did you start being able to find venues to do it at, actually get people to be able to come? When did you start seeing that happen?
So as John said, we officially became a performance company in 1999. Mm-hmm. By 2000, 2001, we were finding venues to perform our work in. Some of our earliest shows were at the now defunct Consolidated Works in South Lake Union neighborhood.
Yeah.
Really cool multi-purpose warehouse space. We presented some shows there.
Yeah.
We also got to perform on the stage of what was then the Seattle Opera House before shut down to be remodeled. We presented a story from Japanese mythology there as part of an event. Yeah. So, yeah, pretty quickly we started adding indoor venues into our street corner work, which we kept doing.
Though. Oh, you did?
Yeah, for a long time. And we still revisit that model at least once a year for our anniversary. We'll go and set up our freestanding aerial dance rig in a park somewhere and just present a free show.
I bet
show.
That feels real organic. Like it's probably one of some of the best stuff you like to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really fun. And we're at the mercy of the elements and the passersby.
Right.
And it really brings us back to our roots.
It's like a risky show. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
a fun show.
Yeah. It's really fun though. Because it's free to the community too, which is great.
Seattle, we're always investigating when we can do some street theater because if there's one thing Seattle needs right now is more spontaneous theater popping up on the streets, making people stop from their South Lake Union job.
Yeah.
And regard something as important as myth and folklore, which is what we focus on.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys go with original content, or are you mostly taking from material that existed out there and reinterpreting it, or how do you guys usually pick that sort of stuff?
So our mission is to help preserve mythology and folklore through acrobatic theater and dance performance.
Yeah.
So all of our Kabiri shows are based on folklore and mythology.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any specific reason? You mentioned Japanese, but do you even go beyond that even?
We're global.
Yeah,
we work there. Is not a continent that we have not made contact with.
Yeah.
And it's a very organic process by how it's guided. It can be, for our major shows, there's been a contiguous thread running quite literally since 2000.
Yeah.
And each show does have a teaser of the next show.
Cool.
In addition, there are things in current events, myth and folklore provide all of the solutions. Any anthropologist, any folklorist will explain all of society's problems can be solved from the stories in myth and folklore because of how they're created. Mm-hmm. And so often current events will have us do repertory pieces that are pertinent in ways that the audience probably will not expect, but it will give some sort of nourishment for them so that they can move forward and work at making more soulful decisions about the future.
Well, I can see exactly where you're coming from, because that's always been my thing is that I feel like sometimes the what we're experiencing right now, we feel like is the first time in history of humankind we've ever had that experience. And the reality is almost all of it has been experienced before, and almost all of it had some sort of solution or even, you know, at the end of the day, sadly, some disintegration or things like that. And so it's really neat to recall back to historical, you know, stories and folklore to try and find that those particular solutions. And it makes you feel less like you're alone.
Absolutely. Right? That's a huge part of our work. And we get a lot of great feedback from our loyal audience members, but that's one big theme that we hear is that, wow, seeing that story of that struggle and that hero or that devastating situation, it made me realize that, yes, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I can resonate with the story from 4,000 or more years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a big world, but that's not a bad thing. almost in a weird way, right?
Right. Yeah. Reminds us how connected we all
are. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it reminds us of who we have been.
Yes.
If you look at many cultures, you know, the past 2,000 years has been pretty tumultuous in the 10,000 years of recorded history.
Yeah.
We've made some strong gains culturally in the past 50 years. Uh-huh. But if you travel back prior, just moving slightly behind early Greek and further back,
yeah,
you'll find moments of incredible egalitarian culture, progressive thought,
yeah,
that is astoundingly different from what we have today,
mm-hmm,
and is not, but there are solutions there that we have not, that we need to revisit, that,
yeah,
we need to go back and say, oh,
right, it,
wow,
could be
that
done.
That would give us what we're trying, yeah, to get to,
yeah,
and we haven't been able to get to.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you go 2,000 years back, you may find a path that you wouldn't consider that will give us what we're seeking,
yeah,
making our world better,
yeah,
but we haven't quite gotten it.
Right, right. So, John, you kind of hit on this a little bit, and I want to get an answer from both of you on this one. You talked a little bit about your personal history. Can you talk a little bit about why you started Kabiri and got into this line of work? I would love to hear from both of you on that one.
Well, you know, the seed was that I danced as a kid in, mm-hmm, the ballet. My entire family was with Pacific Northwest Ballet.
Oh, wow.
Immersed in it.
Yeah.
But due to development, the change of, quite literally, the change of Seattle in the 70s.
Yeah.
We're talking about the change now. We sort of got pushed out economically from,
yeah,
the art scene. And I had to go, and being in a house that was abject poverty and living hand to mouth, I of course started thinking, oh, what do I want to do? And so I decided, mm-hmm, I'd become a biochemist. But I became a biochemist, worked in the industry, and utterly convinced that the purpose of a 4-year a degree at a university is to teach you that you hate what you thought you had. That's going to resonate with everybody, right?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, UW donors.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're all like shaking their head. Yeah, 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 right. Yeah. So I ended up, I ran into some people at,
yeah,
I actually ran into some people at Bumbershoot or Folklife,
uh-huh,
that were doing a really wild piece of thematic art. And so I got involved with some of them. It brought me into some people in the Fremont community.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing some very, very wild art with them, mm-hmm, Fremonster Theatrical, and some of the guys who started the Solstice Parade.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me realize where I needed to go. So I work backstage in theater.
Okay.
And I just walked away from the sciences completely. And as far as the myth, my minor was in comparative, has like the humanities of culture. It's,
sure,
a little minor they have up at Western that's really amazing, and,
yeah,
they have amazing teachers. And so all of my art was based on these stories that I had been reading, because in my day I was just immersing myself in a lot of Sumerian Babylonian,
mm-hmm,
stories. And I would go out to my friends in the artistic community. I'd be like, I'm doing this performance, and it's, you know, it's about this and this and this and this. And they have this vacant stare. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You don't know the story of the Anzu bird and how, yeah, it took the tablets of destiny. And they were like, and I was like, well, wait, you should know this. Everybody should know this.
Yeah.
So instead of doing like the Coen brothers sort of attempt at redoing myth in
Got
a
it.
Modern content,
right,
and making this purple, I decided to actually, instead of like, that's sort of like, to me, rowing against the stream or, mm-hmm, across the stream.
Yeah.
I just turned the boat and went with the stream and said,
yeah,
I'm going to reproduce these shows. So
awesome.
People imagine on stage what they see.
Yeah.
They imagine what I am imagining, what I'm reading.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost like a homage to the original content, basically.
It's the symbolization. It's,
yeah,
the inaction. I would,
yeah,
say it's the inaction of the original content.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And how about you, Charlie? How did you stumble into this field of work?
It was literally a stumble.
Yeah.
That's a good word. So I grew up doing musical theater
from
about age 5 and did that all through high school. Mm-hmm. And then in college started studying a few different forms of folkloric and ethnic dance. Mm-hmm. I saw some fire dancers performing in 1998 and said, ooh, I want to learn that. And then went to see a performance by a group that doesn't exist anymore, but they were called Cirque de Flambe. They were a fire circus.
Fantastic.
So I went to see that performance, which John was involved with, and approached him prior to the show and said, I have to confess, I'm here with an ulterior motive. I'm really interested in learning fire dancing. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, fortunate for you, I'm starting a troupe right now.
Yeah.
So, and the rest was history, as they say. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a little driveway on the Capitol Hill neighborhood mm-hmm. here in, up in Seattle where John and I met, and all this officially sort of began. But I've had a lifelong passion and interest in mythology. Mm-hmm. I remember as a young child telling my mom, we learned about ancient Egypt today where they believe that the sun was a god. That's so interesting, isn't it? It's just really was different than anything I had grown up hearing. And I was completely enchanted by those ideas. And so I read a lot of mythology as a child. My earliest memories are of theater. And so having an outlet and a way to bring those two things together was a dream come true for me.
Right.
And being part of the Kaviri has really been my life's work.
Awesome.
I also have a day job because arts, it's quite difficult to pay the bills as an artist.
Right.
But it's really been my raison d'etre in this lifetime for the last 20 years.
That's fantastic. Did you have any nonprofit work before that? And like not nonprofit experience at all?
I didn't. So when we legally incorporated here with Washington State in 2001, it was John and I and an attorney helping us a little bit, filling out paperwork and going, mm-hmm. well, hope we did this right. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we pretty quickly started to connect with peers, mm-hmm. other organizations in the community who were really generous with helping us navigate and figure it out. We got our tax exempt status pretty quickly as well, which was great. And I've been our sort of bookkeeper and overseer of all things legal and financial, contracts, all that fun stuff since back in the day.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I always love that. So we have a charity basically a week come in. And personally, it's one of the things that we like our listeners and people who want to get involved in nonprofit work know is that you don't need the degree. You know what I mean? You really just do it, dive into it, try it out. Because if you do that and you actually do something you're passionate about, it will end up benefiting you in the long run. Nobody I've ever met who decided to go into nonprofit work despite not having any experience was ever unhappy. They really enjoy it.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I would also say just know that there's a huge community of people out there who are willing to answer questions and help you. There's other nonprofits and organizations that can be resources for you. Mm-hmm. At least once a year, we have people reach out to us with questions like, I'm thinking about starting a nonprofit. What does that entail? And, you know, we're happy to let them sit in on board meetings or pick our brain about any aspect of running a business. Like, there's a lot of help out there if it's something that people want to do.
Now, you guys hit on something that I think is very interesting. In your personal story, John, you talked a little bit about being pushed out almost economically out of Seattle. And you even talk about how you have to have a day job to support, you know, the work that you're passionate about. Have you noticed how hard is it for a nonprofit for art nonprofit to succeed in Seattle with sort of the current sort of obstacles you have to overcome economically? I mean, it's a tough economy out there, right?
It's absolutely terrifying for the arts right now. Seattle is going, I do a lot of work with Indigenous people globally,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I go to refugee areas, war zones, and in the period of time, I've recognized something that I call capital deculturation,
mm-hmm.
and it's when people, it's like, you know, in a refugee camp, I'll see people who are reaching out because they need to have a cell phone, because that's survival,
mm-hmm.
and so they're doing things, and they're not remembering their traditional songs,
mm-hmm.
But that doesn't limit itself to areas of strife. Even in Seattle, South Lake Union used to have upwards of possibly 20 black box theaters. That might be high, but mm-hmm. there were a lot.
Yeah.
There is one entertainment center.
Unbelievable.
In
yeah,
because and that's Little Darlings.
Yeah, because it just can't.
Literally, the only entertainment, the only people going up on stage is a topless club in South Lake Union.
Yeah, wow. And because it just seems like it can't. It's so hard to exist. Yeah.
So Seattle as a city needs to look at itself and it needs to say, are we going to lose all culture?
Yeah.
And this has been happening since it's interesting since 1968.
Yeah. Yeah.
As it hasn't been just in the last surge.
Yeah.
Or is Seattle as a whole, is everybody going to pitch in and say, you know what, we're going to actually make this. We were looking at a building down by the Columbia Center, and it's this old church that's been turned into a conference center, and we were like, what if we had that?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'm not being egotistical. If we had something like this, we could change the cultural milieu of Seattle.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah,
having something where all cultural arts groups. It's what we're trying to do with Arcadia right now. It's a place we opened in Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
But Seattle needs dedicated spaces like Consolidated Works, like the space that we just created,
mm-hmm.
where it does not matter your economic status.
Yeah.
You can come and have a show and have a presentation multiple times a year for your arts organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now part of the mission of the Kabiri to do this.
Do you think one of the byproducts will be that Ballard, Fremont, those sort of places that are not like downtown Seattle, they will begin to, or even places like say Bellevue, Everett, Snohomish, maybe not Bellevue. Bellevue's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But like, will you think you'll begin to see outlying areas outside of Seattle be able to cater to more of what you do?
I think we're already seeing that.
Wow.
The problem being is really what you need is you need this in your central hub.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you have to have it. The city's Seattle's identity is in part wrapped around its ability to be artistic, honestly. Yeah.
We're going to be doing a show with, doing actually three shows predicted here with the Persian community, and they're over on the east side, but they do have people in different regions,
mm-hmm.
and realistically, it would be much better for everyone, especially Seattle and the people who need to hear these stories,
mm-hmm.
to have a localized space in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we did a show in 2015 at the Cornish Playhouse, and we finished the show for $14,000.
Yeah.
2 years later, our projected bill was $26,000.
Oh, my gosh. That's unbelievable.
It's literally doubled in less than 2 years to present work as a small to medium sized organization.
Right.
It's getting harder and harder for all of us if you're not the opera or the ballet, basically.
Yeah.
And hard.
Right.
That is in a theater their mandate on their rent is to be accessible to grassroots cultural arts organizations.
Yeah.
$26,000 for a 2 weekend run.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Okay, so one of the things you guys also hit on it kind of rolls into this discussion about, you know, the economics of performing art in places like Seattle. But it kind of still leaves the question out there of what are some of the biggest needs for the Kabiri and for those who engage in it? What are some of the needs that you guys currently have?
Sure, it would be nice to have some staff, wouldn't it, John?
We'd like a damn.
Paid staff?
Paid staff?
Like, what if we got paid? Whoa.
Whoa.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I think she's going to unionize.
Right?
No.
Wait, I'm management. I can't unionize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
no, she, resources. No, we need a development director that wants to jump in and make it work. And we need people need to be volunteering on boards in a very active capacity where they go in and they say, I'm going to be on this board and I'm going to make sure that my presence mm-hmm. generates another $10,000, $20,000, whatever. Everywhere. It's just like every person in Seattle should be doing that. Don't go to a bar. Go to a board of directors meeting.
There you go.
Or go to the bar after the board meeting.
Yeah.
Why you don't? Just you're going to feel better about it when you go to sleep at night.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, be on the board of a charity.
Right. And also go attend these things. Go attend shows.
Mm-hmm.
Go out, see live theater, real theater. Yeah.
Many of the theaters, correct me if I could be wrong about this, so I mean, I'm just coming at this from a complete novice point of view. Are many of the theater groups or theaters in Seattle, are they nonprofits or are they mostly for-profit organizations?
Most of them are nonprofit, uh-huh. I would say. It's a mixture. But
so when you go to these
Seattle
shows,
Seattle Opera is a nonprofit. Yeah. The ballet is a nonprofit.
So Spectrum when you go to these shows, in yeah. part, you are bolstering the nonprofit.
Absolutely, just yeah. by showing up and buying that ticket. Mm-hmm. The important thing to remember, though, is that if we just added up what we sold in tickets for a show, mm-hmm. it doesn't even cover half the expenses of
Got
creating
it.
That show.
Absolutely.
So buying a ticket is fantastic. Yeah. Showing up is fantastic, but volunteering and or donating helps.
Okay.
Also make sure that these great organizations can keep creating their work.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're one of the largest dance companies in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
A run of one of our summer shows will get 1,200 people through. But
wow.
$35 per ticket, and it just to pay the staff
yeah.
and the theater rental is $26,000.
Unbelievable.
The numbers just don't mix.
Yeah.
So we need, yeah. It's almost insurmountable.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's sheer perseverance
yeah.
that we make this continue to happen.
So let's say somebody listens to the podcast and they like what they hear and they want to support the arts in Seattle through supporting Kabiri with some donations. What specifically would donations like that do for your organization?
Well, especially now that we run a studio full time, yeah. we have a 4,000 square foot studio in Ballard, as we talked about earlier. There's a lot of overhead associated yeah. with running a studio, everything from paper towels to office supplies to cleaning supplies. We have teaching staff that mm-hmm. we pay. We have artists and designers and dancers that we pay. Our insurance is quite expensive.
Sure.
A big part of the work that we do entails aerial dance, which means being off the yeah. ground, flying
that,
around
that,
on
that has to make insurance companies
fabric
nervous.
And hoops. Yeah. And we do a lot of aerial dance. And so our insurance is yeah. pretty substantial because yeah. we also teach those art forms. So, yeah, just the day-to-day expenses of running the organization. Mm-hmm. That's we've learned to be really frugal over the years, just yeah. because we don't have a lot. We make what we have go really far. So even a small donation just means the world to us. John and I were talking in the car on the way here, and we're just saying, you know, even when somebody just puts a dollar bill in our donation box, it's just showing that they care,
yeah.
showing that they thought about it, and showing right. that we matter to them.
Yeah.
So it means a lot, and we take every dollar very seriously.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You know, just like, yeah, donations are an amazing thing. What I really like to see is people coming in and getting involved.
Yeah.
But at the same time, donations, that fellow, when I started on a street corner, you know, here's a person, he's homeless, he's having a hard time, and he threw three quarters into my hat.
Right.
And I'm just like, I was shocked. But that was actually an emotional trigger that mm-hmm. caused me to come back 2 weeks later and do it again. And that was the point of success.
Yeah.
So donations tell people that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
That somebody is caring and somebody is thinking about them.
They're connected.
It's
yeah.
a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you donate to something, it's also important to follow them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Instagram, Twitter, stopping
yeah.
by a show, just coming by and seeing what people are doing, what we're doing.
Right.
All of that helps.
Excellent.
We have a lot of free events at our studio. Speaking of which, we do the art walk, the Ballard Art Walk, every month.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of free things going on. So even if people aren't in a position to necessarily buy a ticket, we still want to see them. Just
yeah.
having people in our space is really energizing and exciting. And we've worked so hard to build
yeah.
our studio and our company mm-hmm. and our work that it just we want people to see it
yes.
above all else.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
Awesome. So do you guys have any events or even any programs coming up that you'd like to highlight for folks?
We do. We have a lot going on this year. Just coming up in the beginning of March, over two weekends, we're presenting a theatrical depiction of Plato's Timaeus.
Oh.
It's a Greek philosophical text.
Yeah.
We're focusing on the Platonic solids and elements related to health.
Okay.
Aspects of that text. It's a very dense text, so we
yeah.
can't do it all, but there will be aerial dancers depicting the Platonic solids. We have actors playing Socrates and Timaeus. We have live music, cello, and vocals. It's going to be a beautiful show. It's the first two weekends in March at Arcadia in Ballard. And tickets are already selling, so that's really exciting.
Yeah.
It'll be intimate. We can only seat about 60 people.
Okay.
So, yeah, it'll be a really great experience for people. this summer, we're planning to present the third installment of a trilogy we've been working on for the last few years. Venue and exact dates, TBD, but we've got some some exciting things in the work, likely July. And then in October, we'll be presenting our 13th annual Halloween show at our studio.
Excellent.
So, yeah, we have a lot going on this year. And then the Ballard Art Walk almost every month. And our 20th anniversary, we'll have a big event on May 1st at the studio with a bunch of guest performers. Yeah. And, yeah, we've got to make the most of this studio that we have while we have it.
Yeah. Because
it could go away at any moment.
Right, right.
Such is the nature of Seattle right now.
Yeah, our Saturday nights, expect to see this summer, Seattle Cheta, a Bulgarian dance company. We're hoping Rados is going to be able to do a dance performance. Mm-hmm.
Junyava Women's Choir will hopefully be presenting a concert.
Seattle Kokan Taiko is going to do a mochi festival event. There'd probably be a few events with taiko drumming. We love having taiko drums in there. The Seattle Subayaf Foundation is working to fill a Southeast Asian curriculum to our nights. Mm-hmm. There are probably 30 different shows of indigenous groups coming through.
Excellent. Excellent. That's fantastic to continue to support that art form as well.
Oh, that's what everything we're about is about, supporting the indigenous peoples globally, not just that are here, but all of the ones that have passed before.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
And for those who are listening and want to support organizations that are really trying to swim against the tide and keep art in Seattle, this one is the one for you. Thank you very much, John. Thank you, Charlie, for coming on the podcast.
Thanks again.
All right, and so that was John and Charlie of the Kabiri. That was a fantastic interview that weaved through multiple different places. Really, really deeply enjoyed talking to them. Hopefully, I personally will be able to make it out to one of their shows. It was a very interesting conversation. And overall, I think it's a really interesting topic on saving art in Seattle. So hopefully, we can band together and help make sure that happen. It is a huge part of the city's cultural identity, and we want to make sure that we can keep that going from here on out. Kind of just hit you with some of the upcoming events for the CFD. We are coming up with coming up on the recognition events. We've only got a couple weeks left until we have our Thurston County recognition event on March 1st at the Little Creek Casino and Resort in Shelton. So we're excited to welcome everybody there and partner with the Thurston County Steering Committee on that one. And then we also got the King County recognition event on March 20th. Actually, it's the Snohomish King recognition event on March 20th. And then, of course, the dates for Spokane and Whatcom County are on the website. So take a look at those as well. And whatever area you're in, try to RSVP if you've been nominated. We would love to have you out. Thank you for yet another incredible campaign. $5.4 million raised in 2018. Another 17,000 donors connecting with their community through charitable giving and the combined fund drive. As always, want to thank you for listening to the podcast. I know this was a unique one. Thank you for your patience on that. Really appreciate it. Hope you got something out of it. And we will see you next week, hopefully, with the full crew intact.